The Teacher, written by Freda McFadden, narrated by Leslie Howard. Prologue.
Digging a grave is hard work. My whole body hurts. Muscles I didn't even know I had are screaming with pain. Every time I lift the shovel and scoop out a little more dirt, it feels like a knife is digging into a muscle behind my shoulder blade. I thought it was all bone, but clearly I was wrong. I am acutely aware of every single muscle fiber in my whole body, and all of them hurt. So much. I pause for a moment, dropping the shovel to give the blisters popping up on my palms a bit of relief. I wipe sweat from my brow with the back of my forearm. Now that the sun is down, the temperature is plunged below freezing, judging by the frost on the ground. But I stopped feeling the cold after the first half hour. I took my coat off almost an hour ago. The deeper I go, the easier it gets to dig. The first layer of dirt was almost impossible to break through, but then again, I had a partner to help me back then. Now it's just me. Well, me and the body. But it won't be of much help. I squint down into the blackness of the hole. It looks like an abyss, but it's actually not much deeper than 2 feet. How deep do I have to go? They always say 6 feet under, but I assume that's for official graves, not for unmarked ones in the middle of the woods. But given nobody can discover what is buried here, deeper might be better. I wonder how deep a body needs to be buried before the animals can't smell it. I shiver as a gust of wind cools the layer of sweat on my bare skin. With every passing minute, the temperature continues to drop. I've got to get back to work. I'll dig a little bit deeper, just to be safe. I pick up the shovel once again, and the sore spots in my body all fight to be the center of attention. Right now, my palms are the clear winner. They hurt more than anything. What I wouldn't give for a pair of leather gloves. But all I've got is a pair of big puffy ones that made it hard to grip the shovel. So I've got to make do with my bare hands, blisters and all. When the hole was shallow, I was able to dig without climbing in. But now the only way I can continue is to be inside the grave. Standing inside a grave feels like bad luck. We all end up in one of these holes eventually, but you also don't have to tempt fate. Sadly, it's unavoidable right now. As I dig the blade of the shovel into the dry, hard soil once again, my ears perk up. It's quiet here in the woods, except for the wind, but I'm certain I heard something. Crack! There it is again. It almost sounds like a branch snapping in half, though I can't tell if it was coming from behind me or in front of me. I straighten up and squint into the darkness. Is somebody here? If there is, I am in deep, deep trouble. Hello? I call out, my voice a hoarse whisper. No answer. I grip the shovel in my right hand, listening as hard as I can. I hold my breath, quieting the sound of air entering and leaving my lungs. Crack! It's another branch snapping in two. I'm sure of it this time. And not only that, but the sound is closer than last time. And now I hear leaves crunching. My stomach clenches. There's no way I can talk my way out of this one. There's no way I can pretend it's all one big misunderstanding. If somebody spots me, it's over. I'm done. Handcuffs snapped on my wrists, a police car with sirens wailing, life in prison without chance of parole, all that jazz. But then in the moonlight, I catch a glimpse of a squirrel darting out into the clearing. As it scurries past me, another twig snaps under the weight of its small body. As the squirrel disappears into a clearing, the woods descend back into deadly silence. It wasn't a person after all. It was just a wild animal. The sounds of footsteps were just scampering little paws. I let out a breath. The immediate danger is gone. But this is not over. Far from it. And I don't have time to take a break. I have to keep digging. After all, I have to bury this body before the sun comes up.
Part 1. Chapter 1. Eve. 3 months earlier. People are always telling me how lucky I am. They tell me that I have a beautiful house, a fulfilling career, and I constantly get compliments on my shoes. But I'm not kidding myself. When people tell me that I'm lucky, they're not talking about my house or my career or even my shoes. They're talking about my husband. They're talking about Nate. Nate is humming to himself as he brushes his teeth. It took me almost a year of brushing my teeth next to him in the morning before I realized that it's always the same song, All Shook Up by Elvis Presley. When I asked him about it, he laughed and told me his mother taught him the song clocks in at exactly 2 minutes, which is how long you're supposed to brush your teeth for. I have started to hate that song with every fiber of my being. The same damn song every single morning for 8 years of marriage. I could probably solve the problem if we didn't brush our teeth at the same time each morning, but we always do. We try to maximize our bathroom efficiency in the morning, given that we leave at the same time and are going to the same place. Nate spits toothpaste in the sink, then rinses his mouth out. I've already finished brushing my teeth, but I linger there. He grabs the mouthwash and gargles the caustic blue liquid. I don't know how you stand that stuff, I comment. Mouthwash tastes like acid to me. He spits it back into the sink and grins at me. He has perfect teeth, straight and white, but not so white that you need to look away. It's refreshing. Cleanliness is before godliness, you know? It's horrible, I shudder. Just don't kiss me after gargling with that stuff. Nate laughs, and I suppose it is funny because he rarely kisses me anyway. One perfunctory peck when we part ways in the morning, one when we greet each other in the evening, and then one before bed. 3 kisses per day. Our sex life is equally regimented, the first Saturday of every month. It used to be every Saturday, then every other Saturday, and now for the last 2 years, we have settled into the current pattern. I'm tempted to program it into our shared iPhone calendar as a recurring appointment. I pick up the blow dryer to eliminate the residual dampness from my hair, while Nate runs a hand through his own short strands of brown hair, then picks up a razor to shave his face. As I watch the two of us in the mirror, it's hard to deny the plain fact that Nate is by far the more attractive of the two of us. There's no contest. My husband is incredibly handsome. If somebody made a movie about his life, they would be tapping all the sexiest stars in Hollywood to fill the role. Short but thick, deep brown hair, chiseled features, an adorably lopsided smile. And now that he bought that set of weights to keep in our basement, his chest is turning into solid muscle. I, on the other hand, am decidedly plain. I've had 30 years to come to terms with it, and I'm absolutely fine with the fact that my muddy brown eyes will never have the playful glimmer that Nate's have. My dull brown hair will never do anything but lie limply on my scalp, and none of my features are quite the right size for my face. I am too skinny, all dangerously sharp angles and no curves to speak of. If someone were to make a movie about my life, well, there's no point in even talking about it, because such a thing would be impossible. People don't make movies about women like me. When people say I'm lucky, what they really mean is that Nate is way out of my league. But I'm a little younger, so at least there's that. I leave the bathroom to finish dressing, and Nate follows me to do the same. I select a crisp white blouse buttoned up to my throat, and I pair it with a tan skirt,
because in New England, you've got only 3 months of skirt weather. Four, if you're lucky. After sliding into a pair of pantyhose, I slip my feet into a pair of black Jimmy Choo stiletto pumps. It's only after I've got them on my feet that I notice Nate is watching me, his brown tie hanging loose around his neck. "Eve," he says. I already know what he's going to say, and I'm hoping he won't say it. "Hmm? Are those new shoes?" "These." I don't lift my eyes. "No, these are years old. In fact, I think I wore them on the first day of school last year." "Oh, okay." He doesn't believe me, but he looks down at his own shoes, a pair of brown leather loafers that really are years old, and doesn't say another word. When he's upset, he never yells. Occasionally, he will scold me for things I should not have done, but he rarely even does that anymore. My husband is admirably even-tempered. And in that way, I suppose I am lucky. As Nate does the buttons on the cuffs of his shirt, he glances at his watch.
"You ready to go, or do you want to grab breakfast?"
Nate and I both work at Kasem High School, and today is the first day of school. I teach math, and he teaches English. He is probably the most popular teacher in the entire school, especially now that Art Tuttle is gone. My friend and fellow teacher Shelby told me that Nate topped the list that the senior girls made of the 5 hottest teachers at Kasem High. He won by a landslide. We rarely carpool to work in the morning. It does seem decadent to leave from the same place and arrive at the same location and yet take 2 different cars. But he always stays later than me at school, and I don't want to be stuck there. But since today is the first day of school, we are traveling together. "Let's go," I say. "I'll grab coffee at school." Nate nods. He never eats breakfast. He says it unsettles his stomach. My Jimmy Choo pumps clack satisfyingly against the floor as I make my way to the front door of our 2-story house. Our house is small. We had to pay for it on 2 teacher salaries. But it's new, and in so many ways, it's the house of my dreams. We have 3 bedrooms, and Nate talks about filling the other 2 bedrooms with children in the near future, although I'm not sure how we will achieve that on our current schedule of intimacy. I went off birth control a year ago just to see what happens, and so far it's been a lot of nothing. Nate climbs into the driver's seat of his Honda Accord. Whenever we go anywhere together, we always take his car, and he always drives. It's part of our routine. 3 kisses per day, sex once a month, and Nate is always the one who drives. I am so lucky. I have a beautiful house, a fulfilling career, and a husband who is kind and mild-mannered and incredibly handsome. And as Nate pulls the car onto the road and starts driving in the direction of the school, all I can think to myself is that I hope a truck blows through a stop sign, plows into the Honda, and kills us both instantly. Chapter 2. Addie. I would give anything if it meant I didn't have to get out of this car. I would cut off all my hair. I would read War and Peace. Hell, I would set myself on fire if only I didn't have to walk through the doors of Kasem High. I can't say it enough. I don't want to go to school. "Here we are," my mother says brightly, and unnecessarily, because I can clearly see we are parked right outside the school. I'm not that dumb, in spite of everything that went on last year. She drove me to school this morning in her gray Mazda, I think because she knew if I took my bike to school like I have for the past 2 years, there was no chance I would have ended up at the high school. So she took the day off from her nursing job at the local hospital and is babysitting me to make sure that I show up for my first day. I glance out the passenger side window at the red 4-story brick building that has become such a big part of my life over the last 2 years. I rub my eyes, exhausted because I woke up at stupid o'clock this morning to get here on time. I remember how excited I was on my first day of freshman year at Kasem High. And I liked high school. I wasn't super popular, and my grades were decidedly average, but wasn't bad at all. Until it was. I spent the entire summer babysitting for my neighbor's kids, and also campaigning not to go back to school in the fall. There's only one public high school in Kasem, though, and the private schools are way out of our price range. We could have tried to go to school in another town, but it would be too far for me to take my bike, and a school bus wouldn't pick me up. My mother explained this to me with dwindling patience every time I begged her to reconsider. Maybe, I say hopefully, I could be homeschooled? Addie, she sighs. Come on. You don't understand. I clutch my backpack to my chest, but don't make any move to unbuckle my seatbelt. Everyone is going to hate me. They won't hate you. Nobody is even going to remember. I let out a snort. Has my mother ever met a high school student? I mean it. Mom kills the engine. Even though we're parked in a zone where you're not supposed to leave your car, and someone is probably going to yell at us to move along any minute now. Teenagers are only interested in themselves. Nobody is going to remember what happened last year. Nobody cares. She is so wrong. So totally and utterly wrong. Sure enough, somebody honks at us. First, it's a single honk, then a smattering of honks. Then it seems like one person has sat down on their horn accidentally and isn't getting up anytime soon. I can pull over somewhere else, Mom offers helplessly as she starts the engine again. What's the point? If we pull over, she's just going to give me a pep talk. I don't need a pep talk. I need a new school. And if that's not going to happen, this is all a whole lot of pointless. Never mind, I mutter. My mother is calling my name as I leap out of the car, but I don't stop and turn around. My mom is useless. She says all the right stuff, but in the end, she doesn't have to deal with this. She doesn't have to deal with the fallout of what happened last year, of what I did. As soon as I'm out of the Mazda, I can almost feel everyone's eyes staring at me. There are plenty of girls at the high school who dress for attention, but I was never like that. I always wanted to blend into the crowd. Today, I am dressed in a nondescript pair of straight leg jeans and a gray t-shirt paired with an even grayer hoodie. There's a rule at Kasem High that you can't have any lettering on your butt. A rule that outrages many, many girls. But not only is my rear end free of glittery words, I have made sure that I don't have any lettering anywhere. Nothing that would call attention to myself. Yet every single person is looking at me. The only positive is that my mother was forced to drive away, so she doesn't get to see the stares and the whispers as I trudge toward the metal front doors. My backpack slung over one shoulder. I freaking knew this would happen. Nobody is going to remember what happened last year. Yeah, right. What planet does my mother live on? I already know what they're saying, so I don't stop to listen. I keep my head down and my shoulder slumped as I walk as quickly as I can. I avoid eye contact. But even so, I can hear them murmuring. That's her. That's Addie Severson. You know what she did, right? She's the one who... this is just too awful. I can't even... And then I almost make it. I almost reach the school without any incident. The chipping red paint of the front door is within sight, and nobody has said something awful to my face. And then I see her. Her is Kenzie Montgomery. Arguably the most popular girl in our junior class. Unarguably the most beautiful girl in the class. Class president, head cheerleader, you know the type. She is sitting on the steps of the school, wearing a skirt that I am almost 100% sure violates the policy that your skirt or shorts cannot go any higher than the tips of your fingers when your arms are hanging straight at your sides. Other girls have been sent home for such violations, but Kenzie won't be. You can count on it. She is sitting with her little posse of friends. The girls surrounding her are like a who's who of the most popular kids in school. And there's one addition who would not have been at her side last year, and that's Hudson Jankowski, the new star quarterback. Kenzie and her friends are nearly blocking the path to the school, but there's a little room to get past them. But then, just as I am trying to squeeze through the one-foot open area between Kenzie and the railing of the steps, her eyes meet mine for a split second, and she tosses her backpack there to block me. Ouch. She has deliberately left approximately 4 inches for me to attempt to squeeze through. I could go around the other way, but that would involve walking down all the stairs I just walked up and climbing another set of stairs, which feels a little bit ridiculous considering I'm almost at the top. And it's not like there's a person sitting there. It's just a freaking backpack. So while Kenzie is talking to her friends, I attempt to squeeze past her leather bag. Excuse me? Kenzie's voice shuts me down mid-step. She's looking up at me with her big blue eyes fringed with long dark eyelashes. I first met Kenzie in middle school when she was in my history class, and I couldn't help but think she was the most perfect-looking human being I had ever seen in real life. Like, I saw pretty girls before, but Kenzie is on a whole other level. She's tall, with a lithe figure and silky long golden blonde hair. Every single feature of hers is more attractive than every single one of mine. Kenzie is living proof that life is not fair. Sorry, I mumble. I was just trying to get through. Kenzie's long eyelashes flutter. Do you think you could not step on my backpack? Kenzie's friends are watching our interaction and giggling. Kenzie could shift her backpack or take it off the steps altogether so that I could get through. But she's not going to do it. And that is somehow just so freaking amusing to all of them. For a second, my eyes make contact with Hudson, who quickly looks down at his dirty sneakers. He's been doing that for the last 6 months. Avoiding me, pretending like he didn't used to be my best friend in the entire universe since we were in grade school. For a second, I fantasize about a universe in which I could take on a girl like Kenzie Montgomery, where I could step on her stupid backpack with the little pink furry puff hanging off it and spit at her. What are you going to do about it? Nobody ever stands up to Kenzie. I could do it. It's not like I have anything to lose. But instead, I mumble an apology and go back down the steps to find another way into the school. Like everyone else, I give in to Kenzie. Because the truth is, as bad as it is now, it could always be worse. Chapter 3. Eve. I didn't even realize how much my head was throbbing until I take my first sip of coffee. I've got about 10 minutes before I have to get to my classroom, and I take that time in the teacher's lounge to sit with my closest friend, Shelby, and decompress. Nate has already gone to his classroom. He took his coffee to go. Then he gave me the first of my 3 pecks on the cheek. "So, how was your summer?" Shelby asks me, as if we haven't been texting nonstop since the 4th of July. Not bad. I spent most of it teaching summer school. I imagined that when I became a teacher, it would be great to have the summers off, but it hasn't worked out that way. How about you? Amazing, Shelby sighs as she crosses her legs. She's wearing the same Nine West gray pumps that she wore on the last day of school. I already know that she spent most of the summer on Cape Cod with her tech genius husband and 3-year-old son. Her perfectly bronzed skin is a dead giveaway. I'm so sad to be back. Connor wouldn't stop crying when I dropped him off at preschool this morning. It's good for him, I say, except what do I know? Shelby takes a long sip from her styrofoam cup of coffee, leaving behind an imprint of her red lipstick. Nate looks good. Has he been working out all summer or something? Probably. This summer, Nate was teaching a drama program for kids at the high school. He doesn't have a degree in drama, but he's taken classes in college, and moreover, he's a natural. In another life, Nate could have been the next Brad Pitt. But on the days he wasn't working, he went down to the basement to lift weights. I suppose he doesn't want anything to jeopardize his chance to be the hottest teacher at Kasem High for the second year running. He's very into fitness. I just wish Justin felt the same, she laughs. He's only 36, and he's getting a gut already. I wonder how many times a day Justin kisses Shelby, if they have sex more than once a month. I wonder if she lies awake next to him in bed at night and wishes she could be married to anyone else, or even nobody at all. I wish I could ask her. I've only ever been married to Nate. Maybe these feelings are part of every marriage. Maybe it's normal. Have you seen art? I ask instead. The smile drops off Shelby's face. No. He resigned, obviously. And I've heard he hasn't been able to find another teaching job. Up until the spring, Arthur Tuttle was a math teacher at Kasem High, and also one of the most beloved teachers in the school. When I first started working here, fresh out of my master's program, he took me under his wing. But that was the sort of thing Art would do. He was genuinely the nicest person I had ever met, always ready with a comforting word or one of his wife's famous brownies. And every year at the staff Christmas party, Art would dress up as Santa Claus, because even without the red suit, he was a dead ringer. And now he's ruined. I wonder how he and Marcia are doing, I murmur. And the kids, she adds. 2 in college now, right? I wince, thinking of Art's boys. Part of me wants to try to help him with some money, but he'll never accept it. And anyway, we don't have much to give after our hefty mortgage payments are done. Plus, Nate wants to save for the baby we'll never have. It's so unfair, I murmur. He didn't do anything wrong, and she... Shelby's thin eyebrows shoot up. We don't entirely know that. I try to mask my irritation by taking another sip of my coffee. It's not going to help to rant at Shelby, especially this early in the morning. Anyway, this is why Art had to resign. It doesn't matter what happened or didn't happen. It only matters that parents were calling the principal and telling her that they didn't trust that man around their children. Art, the nicest person who ever was, who didn't have an evil bone in his body, could no longer be trusted. She's in my class, you know, I tell Shelby. Oh? 6th period. I've only seen her photo in the roster of students, and it was one taken about a year ago for the yearbook. I've never seen her in real life, but she looked painfully ordinary in her photo. Nondescript, not so different from the way I looked at the same age. Be careful. There's a smile playing on Shelby's lips, but at the same time, a look of warning is in her eyes. That girl is clearly extremely troubled. She doesn't have to tell me. From the moment I saw the name Adeline Severson on my roster, I had a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach. In my nearly 10 years of teaching, I never once asked to have a student removed from my class. but I almost did it this time. I have a terrible feeling about this girl.
Chapter 4. Addie. School is fine until we get to lunch. I mean, it's not going great or anything. It's not like the most fantastic day of my whole life, but it's fine. A lot of kids socialize during the school day, but it's not like you have to talk to other kids. You go into a classroom, you sit your butt down on a chair, and then listen to the teacher talk for 40 minutes. Then you go to your next class. So it's fine that nobody's talking to me. But lunch is different, because everybody is sitting in groups and talking to each other. And if you're not with other kids, then you're some kind of loser who nobody wants to socialize with. And that is me all over today. Not that I had many friends before. For most of my school career, it would be me and Hudson. We would plot to get the same lunch period so we could sit together, because he didn't want to be alone any more than I did. It's funny because when we were in grade school, Hudson was more of a social pariah than I was. Hudson had a fatal case of the cooties. I was just a quiet kid who had trouble talking to kids I didn't know. But most students actively tormented Hudson. They made his life miserable. Today, as I walk through the rows of sticky benches, clutching my tray containing a hot dog, crinkle-cut French fries, a few packets of ketchup, and a carton of chocolate milk, I literally do not know where I'm going to sit. I make eye contact with a few kids who I used to be friendly with, and they quickly look away. Hudson is here, of course, but he's planted himself at Kenzie's table, his pale hair mussed as he tilts his head toward her, deep in conversation. Hudson is for real Kenzie's latest boy toy. He has officially arrived, and he has not taken me along for the ride. I can't blame him. I wish he would at least start speaking to me again, though.
Addie! Addie, over here!
I swivel my head to see who is calling my name. It's Ella Curtis, who I only know because she's the skinniest girl in the junior class by at least 10 pounds. Ella and I have barely said a dozen words to each other in the last 2 years, but now she's sitting at one of the benches, waving vigorously to me. She's not the sort of person I would ordinarily eat with, but I'm deliriously happy to be invited to sit with her. I drop down into the seat across from her, dumping my tray on the table as I manage my first genuine smile of the day. Hey, I say. Thanks.
No problem.
Ella picks up a French fry with one of her skeletal fingers and licks the ketchup off it, but doesn't take a bite.
I felt bad for you, just standing there because nobody wants to sit with you.
I don't know what to say to that. She's right, but I feel weird acknowledging it. But I'm glad there are people who are still speaking to me. Maybe my mother is right. Maybe everybody will eventually just forget about it, and it won't be a big deal anymore. Ella flips her long, stringy brown hair over one shoulder as she looks in the direction of Kenzie's table. I turn my head just in time to see Kenzie resting her blonde head on Hudson's shoulder.
Hey, do you think they're dating?
She asks me. Don't know, I mumble. I take a bite of my hot dog, which tastes processed, even for a hot dog. It's basically rubber.
Hudson is so hot.
She has finished licking the first French fry and she puts it down. She picks up another fry and starts licking that one.
They make a good couple.
I grunt in response, and I hate to admit that I agree with her. They look good together. Kenzie's golden blonde hair even complements Hudson's hair color, which is also blonde, almost white.
Didn't you, like, go out with him last year?
She presses me. I shake my head. No. It was never like that between the two of us. Hudson and I became friends in grade school because we both had dads we were ashamed of. His situation was worse, though, at least on the outside.
My dad is gone now, but in those days, he used to pass out drunk in our living room in a pool of his own vomit. But at least nobody at school saw it. Hudson's dad, on the other hand, was the janitor for our elementary school. He was frequently seen pushing a mop and bucket through the hallways and yelling angry curses at kids in Polish. The two of us bonded, and even when we got to middle school and Hudson's dad was no longer around to be a constant spectacle, we stayed best friends. Even when we got to high school and Hudson started to be the kind of kid who turned girls' heads and also made a name for himself on the football field, he was loyal to me. Until one day. Anyway, I don't want to think about it. Ella is now licking a third French fry. I'm fascinated by this. It's like she's eating ketchup for lunch, and the French fries are merely a vehicle for the real meal. To be fair, I used to do that when my mom made me celery and peanut butter. But what kid wants to eat celery? French fries are French fries, though. I freaking hate the first day of school, Ella says. Actually, school in general. It's so lame that we have to come here every day and be forced to learn stupid things that will never be important again. I guess. I don't mind the learning part of school. That's not why I didn't want to come here today. Like trigonometry. She crinkles her freckled nose. Like, bro, when will that ever be useful in life? Seriously, it's such a waste of our time. Who do you have for trig? Mrs. Bennett? She groans. She's a total bitch. She gives, like, a ton of homework, and her tests are super hard. That's what I heard anyway. Great. And math has always been my weakest subject. This year is already off to a fantastic start. I have Mr. Bennett for English. That gets a giggle out of her. Okay, that might make up for it. Dude, Mr. Bennett is hot. There is like a serious hotness discrepancy between those two. Like, how did he end up marrying her? I don't know what to say to that. I only vaguely know what either of those two teachers look like. But maybe he's not your type, Ella winks at me. Maybe you would prefer somebody who looks more like Mr. Tuttle. My heart drops into my stomach. This is the last thing I want to talk about. Not really. Seriously. Ella puts down the French fry she was licking and leans across the table, her eyes wide. What was it like being with Mr. Tuttle? That sounds so gross. I drop my eyes, avoiding her curious gaze. Nothing happened with Mr. Tuttle, I mumble. I never said it did. Uh-huh. Her voice is dripping with sarcasm. So how come he got fired then? I don't know. A lump forms in my throat. I don't want to talk about this. Instead, I focus on the container of chocolate milk. There's a joke written on the back of the carton. What does a cloud wear under his raincoat? Oh, come on, she winks at me. You can admit it. Everyone knows it anyway. I lift up the carton of milk to see the answer to the riddle. Thunderwear. He's so old, she continues, her sharp voice cutting through the thrum of activity around us. He's got to be like 50 or older. He looks like Santa Claus. I can't believe you did it with him. Seriously, what was that like? It hits me now. Ella doesn't want to be my friend. She just wants to hear the gossip about me so she can tell everyone how gross it was that I hooked up with Mr. Tuttle, and she got to hear all about it. I knew there was a reason that I never wanted to be friends with Ella. Excuse me, I say. I stand up from the table, grabbing my lunch tray. I've barely eaten any of my food, but I'm not that hungry anyway. And I'm not going to sit here while Ella pumps me for information about something that never happened. I toss the contents of my tray into the garbage, leaving Ella at the table. She doesn't even try to get me to stay. I hear her giggling to herself as I walk away. On my way out of the cafeteria, I pass Kenzie's table. She's deep in conversation with her friends, but I realize Hudson has been watching the entire interaction. His pale blue eyes meet mine for a split second. Then he looks away like he always does these days. He has officially decided we will never speak again. Maybe if that hadn't happened, none of this crap would have gone down with Mr. Tuttle. Maybe I wouldn't be the school pariah. In any case, I storm out of the cafeteria and sit in the library at a table all by myself, waiting quietly for sixth period to begin. Chapter 5. Eve. My husband is with another woman. We are both in the staff cafeteria, but at different tables, like always. When I first started working here, we used to eat together every day. But Nate made a joke about how we would get sick of each other spending so much time together, and I took the hint. So today I am sitting with Shelby and half listening while she talks more about her wonderful summer on Cape Cod. Meanwhile, Nate is two tables over, sitting with Ed Rice, the physical education teacher, and a new teacher who must have started today. The new teacher is clearly straight out of college. Her face has that fresh look that 8 years teaching high school math has flushed out of me. She's pretty in a young and perky sort of way. If she put on a pair of jeans and a t-shirt, she could easily pass for one of the students. But instead, she's wearing a pink blouse and brown skirt, paired with brown loafer heels that I saw at Target last week for $25. I nudge Shelby, who is mid-sentence, gushing about some restaurant that served the best stuffed shrimp she's ever had. Who is that? Shelby looks across the cafeteria at the young woman cozying up to my husband. I think her name is Haley. She's the new, French teacher? French teacher. It's almost too cliche. Shelby's eyes narrow at me. You're not worried, are you? Come on. Nate is a good guy. I want to believe that. I want to believe that the late nights last year were all just because he was sticking around to grade papers or supervise extracurricular activities. I want to believe that our regimented one night of sex per month is all just because he has a low sex drive. Yes, I finally say, I'm sure you're right. And now Haley, the pretty French teacher, has a hand on his forearm. I want to scratch her eyes out. The only saving grace is that Ed Rice, who is chronically single, seems to actively be putting the moves on Haley. But it's clear who Haley's choice would be between the two men. Ed is 20 years her senior and balding. Fortunately, the bell for the next period rings before I can do anything I would regret. Usually, Nate and I dash out of the cafeteria to go our separate directions after lunch is over. But this time, I stride purposefully in his direction, my heels clicking loudly against the floor. I grab him by the arm, in the same place where Haley was touching him moments earlier. Hey, I say, how's your first day going? Nate blinks at me, surprised that I've spoken to him on school grounds. But he quickly smiles.
Swimmingly. How about you, my darling?
Good so far.
Fantastic.
Nate raises an eyebrow, clearly wondering why I approached him. I'm not sure if Haley is watching us, but just in case she is, I reach out and grab his brown tie, tugging him close to me. If I were a cat, I would have peed on him. But since I'm a human, I plant a kiss on his lips that is markedly steamier than our usual 3 kisses per day. He seems surprised, and as always, he's the one who breaks away from the kiss first. and after he does, he brushes at his lower lip with his index finger.
Well then, he says, that was a nice send-off.
He's smiling, but I've been married to him long enough to know when it's not a real smile. But Haley doesn't know. My classroom is on the third floor, and I make it there with 2 minutes to spare before the next bell rings. The new students are filtering into the classroom, sitting wherever they want. I'll have to reorganize them. I've learned from prior experience that if I don't separate teenagers from their friends, I'll never be able to keep their attention. But before I can get into the classroom, a girl steps in front of me. I recognize her as Jasmine Owens, who was in my class all of last year. I gave her an A+ both semesters. She's paired a nice blouse with her blue jeans for the first day of school, and she's traded her usual sneakers for a pair of closed-toe sandals with flowers decorating the toes. "Mrs. Bennett," she says, "I'm so sorry to bother you, but I was just hoping to catch you before your class started. What's wrong, Jasmine?" She flashes me a nervous smile. "I'm trying to get my college application sorted out, and I was hoping you could write me a letter of recommendation." Before I can answer, she adds, "You've been my favorite teacher, like, ever. I'm planning to get a degree in education, and I want to be a math teacher, like you." My cheeks flush with pleasure, and some of the anger I was feeling back in the cafeteria drains out of me. Jasmine was an amazing student, so I'm not surprised she's already working on her college application. And it feels good to hear that I made a difference in a student's life. There are days when I feel like I'm just teaching kids a subject that they hate and, let's face it, will almost certainly never use again. It's hard to make an argument for sines and cosines being useful in day-to-day life. "Absolutely," I tell her. "Please send me an email, and we'll work out the details. And let me know if there's anything else I can do to help you." Now Jasmine's cheeks have turned pink as well. "Thank you, Mrs. Bennett. I really appreciate it." I get a much-needed boost from that interaction, and it keeps me going even when the students whine about having to be sorted into different seats. Nate lets them sit wherever the hell they want. But to be fair, when they are in his class, they are all mesmerized by his magnetic charm. I don't have that particular gift, but I do believe I am a good teacher. By the time I get to the end of the alphabet, I had nearly forgotten about the one name on my roster that I had been dreading ever since I got the list a few weeks ago. "Adeline Severson," I call out. A girl of average height steps forward to claim the next empty seat in line. Adeline Severson is absolutely the least remarkable girl I have ever seen. She could easily blend into any crowd. Her hair is the color of a brown paper bag, and her facial features are all symmetrical but unremarkable. She could be pretty if she tried to be, but she's not trying. At all. I watch as she slides into her desk and respectfully folds her hands in front of her. If her name wasn't Adeline Severson, I would never think this girl was capable of giving me a moment of trouble. "Addie," she tells me. I raise my eyebrows. She chews on her thumbnail. "That's what I like to be called. Addie." I make a note of it, even though I am well aware that people call her Addie. That's what Art called her when he told me about her.
"I was just being nice to Addie. The poor girl lost her father only a few months ago, Eve. I had no idea.
I didn't want her in my class. Art is the best person I've ever had the honor of knowing. A dedicated teacher who truly cared about every single one of his students. If he weren't that way, he would never have gotten into trouble in the first place. And now, because of this girl, his life is ruined." But if I had really thought about it, I would have known that it doesn't make a difference at all if Addie Severson is in my class. The thing I really need to worry about? Addie is in my husband's class, too. Chapter 6 Addie. The first day of school usually isn't so bad. I mean, in terms of work. Mostly, teachers are just telling you what the year is going to be like. Whether they're going to give weekend assignments or not, if they're going to give us a bunch of small tests over the semester or one ginormous test at the end. And then at the end of the day, you don't have that much homework. Maybe just a couple of easy assignments, like write 500 words to tell me a little bit about yourself. The kind of assignments that I can finish on the living room sofa while watching television and stuffing cheese doodles in my mouth. English is my final period class. It's also my best subject. Don't laugh, but my dream job is to become a poet, even though I know that is not a real job that most people could get in this century, and I'll probably end up being a nurse like my mom. My teacher this year is Mr. Bennett, who everybody loves. Mostly a lot of girls love him because they think he's super good looking, but I don't usually care about stuff like that, despite what Ella was implying. Unlike Mrs. Bennett, who marched us all into assigned seats based on our last names, Mr. Bennett doesn't mind if his classroom is a free-for-all. Most of the kids are trying to sit near their friends, but since I apparently don't have any, I take a seat near the window in the second row. I like sitting near the window in English class. It inspires me. A second after the bell rings, something jolts my chair. It takes me a second to realize somebody just kicked one of the legs of my chair. I look up to find Kenzie and one of her minions, Bella, standing over me. "This is my seat," Kenzie informs me. I blink at her. "Oh, but it's the first day and nobody was sitting here, so..." Kenzie's vivid blue eyes, rimmed with dark mascara, bore into me. "This is where I always sit." "What? This is the first day of school, and we literally just got here. How could this be where she always sits?" "Oh," I say again. "But are you deaf?" Bella snaps at me. "Kenzie said this is her seat. Get up." I glance around the room. Most of the best seats are taken, although the one that's next to me is still empty since nobody is willing to sit next to me anymore. Presumably, that's where Bella would sit if Kenzie takes this seat. Given everything already going on with me, the last thing I want is to make an enemy out of Kenzie Montgomery. So I gather up my bag and trudge over to one of the remaining empty seats. It's right in the front row, practically sitting in Mr. Bennett's lap. Great. Mr. Bennett is behind his desk, looking down at the roster. There's a book on his desk, and I take a peek at the spine. It's a book of poetry from Edgar Allan Poe, who is for sure my favorite poet in the whole world. It's pretty much the only thing the entire day that has lifted my spirits. After the bell rings for class to begin, Mr. Bennett lifts his eyes from the roster. His face crinkles in a smile, and as the corners of his lips turn up, I get a little jolt. I had seen Mr. Bennett a bunch of times before in the hallway, but until that second, watching him smile from about 2 feet away, I never realized how stupidly handsome he truly is. I can't even say why exactly, but there's something in the ruggedness of his features and the twinkle in his eye. There are worse things than having to be up in the first row during English class. Of course, he's super old. He's in his mid or even late 30s. And married, of course, to a woman who gave us homework on the very first day of school. So wrong. But I can't say he isn't hot. This class is not going to be torture. Mr. Tuttle wasn't handsome. Nobody ever would have called him hot. He was even older than Mr. Bennett, and he had a big belly that hung over his belt. But it was never about that with him.
"Hello there."
Mr. Bennett rises from his seat and walks around to the front of his desk, where he takes a seat perched on top.
"Welcome to 11th grade English. If you are not supposed to be in 11th grade English, then I would suggest you make a quick exit before anyone notices."
nobody leaves. I have a feeling even if a student found themselves in the wrong place, they might stick around.
Excellent. He drums his fingertips on his right thigh.
Let's get down to business then. This year, we are going to have an emphasis on poetry. You're going to read so many poems this year. You're going to be rhyming in your sleep.
Mr. Bennett rubs a hand over his right knee, and I can't help but notice that the fabric of his pants is slightly worn over his kneecap. I wonder how much money he makes as a teacher. None of his clothes are new or expensive. Then again, Mrs. Bennett was wearing a pair of shoes that look like they cost a fortune. Not that I know much about shoes, but my mom has a pair like that, and she won't let me wear them because she says they're too expensive and I'll ruin them. She's probably right.
Now, he says, I want to go around the room and you tell me your favorite poem. And only tell me your favorite poem if you actually have one. I don't want you to make one up just to impress me, because I will know.
A few hands shoot up, because honestly, it's clear everybody is eager to impress Mr. Bennett, especially the girls in the class. And when he smiles at them, they each giggle in turn. After about a dozen students in the class name their favorite poems, dropping big names like Angelo or Dickinson or Silverstein, Mr. Bennett turns his attention to me, even though I didn't raise my hand. I haven't raised my hand once today. This year, I'm working on being invisible.
Adeline, he says.
I hate it when people call me by my full name in general, because it reminds me of being in trouble. Addie, I correct him.
Addie,
he nods.
How about you? What's your favorite poem?
Annabelle Lee, I say without hesitation. I know it's contained in the book of poems on his desk, but that's not why I said it. I have always loved that poem. It's beautiful, haunting, and romantic all at once. I can recite every word of it from memory.
Ah, another lover of the great Poe.
He looks genuinely pleased.
My personal favorite is The Raven. But Annabelle Lee contains some of his most haunting verses.
He grins at me, and the fine lines around his eyes crinkle.
And so, all the night tide, I lie down by the side of my darling, my life and my bride, in her sepulcher there by the sea, in her tomb by the sounding sea.
A chill goes through me, just like in the poem. He rests his brown eyes squarely on my face, like I am the only person in the room.
Do you know what it's about, Addie?
It's about a girl he loved when he was young, I say. A childhood sweetheart who died. I read that nobody knows exactly who inspired him to write the poem.
We'll discuss this poem in greater detail this year, he says, as well as Poe's love of the letter L. Annabelle Lee, Lenore, Eulalie.
He winks at me.
Adeline.
At this moment, I don't care if everyone in the school hates me. I don't care if nobody is willing to sit with me in the cafeteria. I don't care that I have a stupid amount of math homework for the first day of class. Because my English teacher loves Poe as much as I do. And he winked at me.
Chapter 7. Eve. As always, Nate stayed late at school today. He is one of the supervisors of the school newspaper, in addition to that poetry magazine they put out twice a year, so he's always got something going on. I technically supervise the chess team, but I was informed that I am not required to stay for the meetings, so I generally don't. The last thing I want to do when the school day is over and my head is throbbing is watch a bunch of teenagers push rooks and knights around a board. Since we carpooled this morning, I ask Shelby to drive me home.
When she drops me off at my front door, it's only 3:30. Usually this would be the time when I would dig into a 2-inch stack of homework papers, but since it's the first day, I find myself at a loss for what to do. It's too early in the day for my nightly overflowing glass of wine. I climb into my Kia, not entirely sure where I'm going, even as I am driving down Washington Street. Every town in Massachusetts has a Washington Street and a Liberty Street and often a Massachusetts Street. Whoever named the streets in the state was not very creative. I keep driving until I reach the mall at the west border of Kasem, where the lot is overflowing with cars. There are a number of teenagers there, enjoying their last free afternoon before the piles of homework set in. Watching all the kids filtering in through the front doors gives me pause. Whenever I run into my students outside school, they seem absolutely mortified to see me. I should shrug it off, but something about their humiliation reflects back on me. I sit for a moment in the car, my hands gripping the steering wheel. I wonder what Nate is doing right now. He wouldn't be stressed by the idea of running into his students at the mall. He's probably talking to the new editor-in-chief of the school newspaper, a bright young boy named Bryce Evans. I had Bryce in my class last year, and he was another A-plus student. Never missed a homework assignment. That kid has Ivy League written all over him. I count to 10, then I count from 10 backward. After I do this 3 times, my shoulders relax. I climb out of my car, clutching my light blue purse, which is so large that Nate always teases me that it will make my spine crooked. However, my purse is mostly empty today, so I suppose my spine is safe. As soon as I walk through the sliding doors for the entrance, the smell of cinnamon sugar from the pretzel stand smacks me in the face. I'd love to get a big cup of pretzel bites, and if I were a high school student, I would do just that. But my metabolism isn't what it used to be, so I hold my breath as I walk by the pretzel stand and also by the Godiva chocolates. Yes, I'd love a chocolate-covered strawberry, but it isn't in the stars for today. I keep walking until I reach a store called Footsie's. For a moment, I simply linger outside. The store has a display of Christian Louboutin pumps and boots gracing the window, including a pair of black patent leather heels, although the heel itself is gold. I look down at my Jimmy Choo's, which I purchased new 2 weeks ago, despite what I told Nate. He'll find out when he sees the credit card bill. I love high heels. I've always been a bit on the short side at 5'2", and I hate being shorter than my students. A pair of 3-inch heels gives me a boost that improves my confidence. I prefer when I don't have to tilt my head quite so much to look up at my husband, who is 5'10". And for the most part, aside from these shoes, I've been well behaved. I've got shoes in shopping carts on practically every online site, but the point is I haven't purchased any of those items. I put the shoes in the shopping cart, and I never check out. So why shouldn't I treat myself every once in a while? Footsie's is an upscale store, but relatively large, and there's only one girl manning the shop, sitting at a counter in the back by the cash register, scrolling through her phone. Despite how many teenagers are crowding the mall, there are only a handful of customers here.